echte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a business podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations innovate and grow value in a digital world. Episode 38, Leading Change When Moving to Google Cloud. In this episode, we're going to look at a Google masterclass we delivered to top executives who are leading people through the changes that come with new digital projects and cloud transformation. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hood, a digital strategist at Google Cloud. Thank you for listening. Quick reminder, Google Cloud Next 21 is next week, and that's from October 12th through the 14th. Register to learn how the world's leading companies are solving massive challenges in the cloud, and That Digital Show will have some exclusive content for Next. So subscribe and download those episodes as well. That's all next week, October 12th through the 14th, and you can sign up at g.co/cloudnext. Once again, I'd like to welcome back my co-host for our Digital Masterclass series, Natalie Pucco, Cloud Technology Strategist at Google Cloud. Hi, Natalie. What do we have lined up for our leadership podcast today?
Hi, Chris. Well, today I'm absolutely thrilled to be introducing two amazing transformation leaders at Google, Anna Baird and Sarah Masotti. So they are actually the creators of Leading Change When Moving to Google Cloud, the masterclass. And I've had the honor of being able to work alongside and deliver with these two ladies these lessons over the past 2 years in Europe. And hopefully you can walk away today with some key tips, tools, strategies to effectively manage a technology transition, to coach others through change, and use the psychology of the brain to increase your ability to communicate change. So with that, Anna and Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks, Natalie and Chris.
To kick off, I'm going to start with a true story. Yesterday, a friend of mine who's an executive now at a Fortune 500 company messaged me and said, Natalie, I've got this new platform. It's due to roll out in a couple of months. And it's not the technology that I'm worried about. It's actually the people. This has to work. What's your advice? How have you seen this work? And I thought, gosh, if only they could be a fly on the wall in our Leading Change Masterclass. And here we are. Anna and Sarah, the creators of this course, tell us a little bit about what you do at Google and how this leadership workshop and lessons came about.
So I guess a bit of background about how it came to be. Similar to your friend, we find that it's not the technology that's the problem. It's about getting people across the organization on board with the technology change in order to see that return on investment. We're getting a lot of questions from some of our top customers on how do I get my people engaged? How do I get people excited about the cloud and wanting to use the cloud and adopting it? And we found that in order to see that adoption, we needed all top executives in an organization to be aligned on what the cloud strategy and vision is. And so this course really brings together key stakeholders from IT, lines of business, operations, HR, to come together and align on what is the return on investment, what's the reason that we're moving to the cloud. And with each of those stakeholders, it's a different motivation. And so this initiative is about identifying what are those reasons, how can we communicate those reasons to the various teams within the organization so that people understand the reasons behind the change and they can start to get excited about the cloud and start to run some projects and get moving with it. So it's really the initiator to kicking off those cloud adoption, cloud transformation, and digital transformation programs.
And Sarah, I think the other thing, when you and I started working together and I first arrived at Google Cloud to lead our learning services portfolio for customers, we were both at a big bank together and you were presenting this material to one of our customers in the banking financial industry. And there were two key things that landed with that group that came out of that session. The first thing was not just the understanding about what this transformation looks like for a customer and its employees and its own customers, but the second thing was, what are the skill changes? So how are jobs evolving, emerging, and how can you as an individual contributor or a manager or a leader embrace those skill changes? Not only embrace them, what should you know? What's the blueprint? What can we tell you about what to expect and what you'll develop in the future? So as Sarah, which she'll never share with you, but as she's leading this discussion with this banking financial services customer, they were just enamored with the fact that we could give them that context and that comfort of what's coming. And I think that's what this course is about, is grounding people in the comfort of such an interesting but transformational opportunity.
I think you talked about a lot of interesting things in here. And one of the topics that we discuss a lot at Google Cloud is what you just touched on around digital transformation and how it often is perceived as a digital problem. And really, it is a people or a cultural problem within an organization. So those skills that you were talking about and trying to get people familiar and comfortable with what they're going to have to do, I think is really only a piece of it. If you were to broaden that out a little bit more, and for a leader who might be listening, what might be some of the other areas that they have to be concerned about in this journey?
Well, I can kickstart that because I literally got off the phone this morning, like hours ago, with a customer where we were building a communication plan. So I think one of the first things that hits us as humans, generally outside of our jobs and everything, is how do we communicate with one another and what words are used, what communication methods are used to get messages across. And I think for a lot of our customers, no matter where they are in their cloud transformation, their cloud journey, it's all about, well, what's happening now, but what's the future state and how are we getting there? And is it baby steps that I can see and are tangible and digestible that someone's told me about or I'm bought into? Or are they things that are big and hairy and scary and therefore I turn off by not knowing what's coming or the unexpected or the fear and anxiety of things that I feel aren't in my control? So communication planning, among other things, is one of the key elements that comes out of this, and how leaders communicate down, but also how individual contributors can ask questions and communicate upwards was one of, I think, the most powerful pieces that I could convey to the customer in my conversation this morning.
Yes, I completely agree. And we know that psychological safety is the most important element for high performing teams and to foster an environment for innovation. And on top of that, as an added benefit for the study that we did at Google, the teams that reported to having really strong psychological safety actually returned much higher revenue and sales metrics. So psychological safety is absolutely essential for innovation, for high-performing teams. And it's funny you mention it too, because just with this customer I'm working with now, up front, we identified what is the key cultural behavior that Google, our customer, and the partners on the account want to live and breathe. What's that most important cultural element? And psychological safety came up because it's so critical for innovation and high-performing teams.
Change is scary. That's the bottom line here. Change is scary. And for a lot of organizations, they start to experience this from the bottom up or at the middle. But is that the ultimate driver for resistance?
And what's interesting is that people resist change. And one of the key things to remember is that you will get resistance to the change that you're introducing. And it's not because people are being pains. It's a natural human reaction to resist change. We are hardwired to resist change. There's some interesting neuroscience research that I can just share a few tidbits. When we experience the feeling of being excluded from something, it triggers a response in the anterior cingulate, which is the dorsal portion of the brain, which is the same part of the brain that deals with physical pain. And it was so interesting how this was discovered. There were two neuroscientists who were looking at pain, and one was looking at social pain and exclusion, and another neuroscientist was looking at what it feels like to go through physical pain. And by looking at their brain scans, they found that social exclusion pain and physical pain responded in our brains in the very same way. And this makes sense when you think about when you've gone through physical pain or social pain, they're both equally as powerful. And so the takeaway when it comes to change management and leading others through change is that it is quite painful to be excluded from key conversations. There is a real reason and psychological reason why people resist change. And typically, there are three main reasons. The first reason why people resist change is because they feel a loss of control. So people no longer feel in control of their role or their job or activities, and they feel insecure about their new responsibilities. This comes up all the time when people become real experts in on-premise or customized IT technology. Now they have to learn a whole new way of working on the cloud or with a different cloud. The next reason why people typically resist change is because they feel a loss of competence. So they would be afraid of learning new skills and competencies, concerned about losing personal identity that came with the previous expert status in the old way of working. Also, in terms of loss of competence, people are unsure that their existing skills will be relevant in the new world. And the third main reason why people resist change is because they feel a sense of loss of relationships or sense of direction. So this can sound a little dramatic, but it is a quite common reaction where when a change is introduced that's so dramatic, people are unsure about their place in the new world. They're afraid of losing a sense of belonging to a team or a group and feel unsure about the vision for the future. And this kind of uncertainty about skills, control, competence, and sense of direction is very overwhelming. And that is why people resist change and why you can expect resistance to change.
Sarah, I'll never forget the story when you and I were working with a CEO and his leadership team. We had just flown to Norway together. It was an absolute blizzard. And he likened technology change to an iceberg. And that's quite fitting considering we were in Norway. And he said, with an iceberg, you have the obvious top of the iceberg and then you have the bottom of the iceberg. And then I remember him telling us over lunch that you have this hard, thick layer in the middle that's kind of difficult to see and it's really hard to break through, but it's there. And he was sharing with us that a lot of organizational change, you can bring the leaders at the top on the journey, you can bring the grassroots employees on the journey, but we often forget about this middle layer, the middle layer of management. Those who don't set the vision of the change, but who are directly responsible for making and executing on that strategy and change. We systematically underestimate how many people are going to be affected by change. Now, there are some very standard faces of change that we talk about with leaders that they should be able to really clearly recognize. Can you walk us through some of those faces of change?
You're absolutely right. Executives are usually on board with the vision and the change, and then the pressure comes into place at that middle management layer. There's typically four faces of change that we see within organizations when a change is introduced. And so the first face of change, and you can actually picture what this face might look like, is the critic. Now, the critic opposes the change outright, and they are quite vocal about opposing the change. So they might be against moving to the cloud or very experienced in their on-prem world, or they are opposing the particular cloud provider. Now, the second main face of change is the victim. The victims panic when a change is introduced, which is a natural reaction, especially in the workplace. People get very emotional about different types of organizational changes, more than you might think. Now, the third face is the bystander. The bystander ignores the change. They just put their head down and keep on going with their everyday. And finally, the fourth main face of change that you will see is the navigator. The navigator is empowered and excited about learning new technologies, and the navigators are typically the ones that we all love to have on our teams. But I'll ask you, Natalie, and you might know the answer, but which out of the four faces do you think is the second best face to have on your team?
I think it's the critic, because although at the onset, you think that these people are going to derail the project. Actually, when you can really bring these individuals on board, they can be some of the most influential voices of change.
Yes, the critics have passion and energy and they care. And especially when we talk about organizational changes, you need to have people engaging. They need to be listening to what's happening if they're going to adopt their behavior. And the critics have that passion. And frankly, they bring up a lot of the valid fears and restraints that you need to think through as a leader as you go about driving that change. So they are the second best to have on the team, absolutely.
And Sarah, I think one of the cool parts for the customers that work with us and we talk to about this content is there are some very real quick tips and tricks on how to navigate these four faces, like with the critics, how you sit down with them, you give them that extra time, you give them the running room to talk to you about what they're opposing, what they suggest, you give them a voice. With the bystander, you may never change them. So you acknowledge them, you communicate to them, but you realize it might be one way and you might not be able to shift their behaviors. So what are other ways you can motivate them? With the victim, how do you help give them a platform to realize they have the empowerment? So turning that poor me story into but you can build skills with us. You can build alongside your colleagues. You're not the only one in this boat. And then, of course, the group that we all, as company leaders and managers, we want those champions. So if you have navigators, give them lead roles, let them talk to their peers, let them lead champion networks and centers of excellence because they want it. They desire that activity. Those are the tips and tricks that we talk to our customers about is divide and conquer, acknowledge the faces and figure out what you can do to set those individuals on a path towards collaboration.
And bringing in a how we do it kind of Google voice here, oftentimes when we run these classes, we say, can everybody in the room recite what their organization's mission is? And Sarah and Anna, you would know 9 times out of 10, the leaders in the workshop can't recite their mission. And one thing at Google, we is kind of drilled into us from day one, our mission is to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. And that is something that we all know from the second that we start into our business. I echo your thoughts here, Sarah, around having a really key vision and mission is so key as part of that active sponsorship, knowing exactly where you're pointing the ship and for others on your team to see that vision too.
Cloud, like every other technology, is a vehicle to reach business objectives. And so the messaging around the move to cloud has to all be brought back to the business objectives and what each line of business is trying to achieve. And that's why bringing those key stakeholders from the lines of business is equally as important as having those technology executives in the room.
And Sarah, you just said something which is huge. And Natalie and Chris, stakeholders are as part of this course. We hear often about RACI charts and roles and responsibilities and who's going to be responsible for what part of the communication, of the action, of the measurement of the actions. And so another piece that we not only identify and talk about, but really impress upon the people that take this particular class is, how are you identifying those people? And are you actually acknowledging the different personas you're dealing with? People absorb information differently. They learn different ways. They need different motivations. And so it's not a one size fits all. And trickling down from a mission and vision of a company, you might have lines of business that are different. You might have completely different companies under an umbrella structure. So we have to think about that as part of our stakeholder management as part of this journey. And I think so often, as Sarah pointed out from the first sentence she said in this podcast is people are often forgotten and the technology steps are all mapped out and the stakeholder mapping is just something of the past. And so we're putting that at the forefront to say, start with this. Don't make the mistake. Don't let yourselves be the ones that start with the technology first.
Yes, and super practically how we actually do that. If you're a leader listening to this and you think, yes, that's exactly what I want to do, imagine a spreadsheet. You got your columns and rows. We have columns that identify a list of stakeholders in your organization. Two, prioritize those stakeholders that you've identified. Three, engage with each of those stakeholder groups. So have a lead from each of those stakeholder groups that you engage with to represent the needs of that group. The fourth thing is you would assess the change impacts on those particular stakeholder groups. How do you do your job today? How might you do your job in the future? And then the fifth really practical action which we take is establish a change action plan based on the unique factors of that particular stakeholder group. So if you were to walk away with five key points, they would be those five columns inside your graph that you could walk away, sit down with your organizations, and like Anna said, make sure nobody gets left behind.
And don't do it in a silo, right? It's not one person's job. This is a collaborative effort. And so make sure that you are truly building diversity of voice and thought around that stakeholder evaluation table. And I think we even have, to your point, Natalie, additional guidance on who to make a part of this conversation at the beginning.
I spent time with one of our customers, and what was really interesting is what happened around the table. As we started to introduce ourselves, I just assumed that everybody there from the company knew each other. And as we started, somebody raised their hand and said, sorry, I don't know everybody around the table. And what we found out was there was groups that had never spoken to each other. Same company, different teams who had never actually spoken to each other. And it was because the executives who mandated this change happen got everybody into a meeting and really forced them to communicate. And through that process, a lot of eyes were opened, a lot of channels were created to generate these moments that allowed for change to materialize successfully.
And Chris, no one wants to be on an island by themselves. People want to commiserate. They want to hear that this is not easy for anyone, and it's not. We know that. There's no particular industry, there's no one company that's been able to do this with the snap of a fingers. If it were that easy, my goodness, none of us would be here within our roles and responsibilities. So I think that's the other piece. When you start to hear from subject matter experts who have been with customers and saying, this is what this other customer experienced, just like you. They're in a different industry, but the same place on the cloud journey. That's comforting. And I think you find more positive mindset when you hear those comforting messages. So that's the other piece you get is best practice. It's such a comforting feeling to not only be able to open your mind to say, I'm not the only one, but also to hear what those experiences and best practices look like. And so sharing of that across industries, across where people are on their journeys, not everyone's at the start, not everyone's towards the end. We're all on a continuum. And so that's where our subject matter experts and the people that contribute to leading these classes really take you. They push you into those areas of discomfort by providing you the story that you're not by yourself. And I think that's also equally as powerful to companies when we sit in the virtual room or the physical room together.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time with customers talking about stories, just as you mentioned, and I get the same response every time. Yes. But we're not that company. And I have to respond, you're missing the point. You are all having the exact same journey, that cloud transformation. So you can learn from these other experiences in terms of how you can change and evolve within your own organization. But I want to take a little flip on this real quick. If we are constantly recommending to other people recommendations around how they can leverage these stories and experiences so that they can change, how do we do it internally? So how long has this masterclass been around and what have you learned over the course of time presenting it?
A lot is the short answer. From my perspective, two quick sentences. I've been at Google now for almost 3 years, and this content and course, which was not of my making, but I got to join the train when it was leaving the station to support it, has been around as long as I have at Google Cloud. And we've taken feedback, we've heard from customers, we've chopped and changed areas that we can expand on, that we can retract, that maybe aren't as interesting. The content's constantly evolving because this journey is evolving. And as we learn more, we have to put more into the course.
I think the one thing we can count on is change. And it's an interesting question, Chris, because it's really the whole point of this is that the cloud is constantly changing. The technology is constantly changing. And the roles that we're hiring for today to thrive in the cloud are going to adapt and change as the technology rapidly changes. And so part of the key takeaway for leaders is that you need to learn not only how to manage this change today, you know, how to set up a really solid transformation program with all the right metrics and delivery. It's about how do you become a person who thrives in change, who will jump at the opportunity where, you know, there is change, and to role model a behavior where there is constant updates and change and not full information, and being comfortable with testing and iterating and adapting on the spot and living in this world of constant change. And that's one of the other key messages. The feedback that we get is it's about how to deal with change, how to lead others through change, and how to be comfortable with change myself.
Absolutely. And to add a second example of something that we added in as this course grew is an exercise for leaders to help them articulate the value of business transformation. It's one thing to have one particular message or one single message around what this change will do for the business. But as humans, we inherently look for the what's in it for me message. And so with that, we do this exercise as part of the advisory where we guide leaders through thinking about the value of business transformation at four different layers. The first layer is what's in it for the company. So what's the value of the transformational change for the company? What's the value of the change for the team, each specific team or unit? What's the value of the change for the individual? So for me, in my role as a developer. And then finally, the fourth aspect, which we added to this, which I think is such an important moment to note, is what's the cost of not changing? We so often focus on this, oh, what will be, imagine if, but we often forget that not doing anything is also a decision that's being made by leaders. So having you and your leadership team sit around a table and talk about what would our business and our world look like in the next 5 to 10 years if we did nothing. That is a very powerful lens to that conversation of change.
Are there any KPIs or ROIs or measurements that leaders could look at to validate how change is progressing?
Great question. Of course, there are always pieces of data. Google's a very data-driven business that you can look at. I'll speak from an internal Google perspective for our leaders. Like, let's open the kimono a little bit and share that we run the likes of NPS type surveys all the time for our engineers, our business teams, our HR teams. And so some of the things that we often look at from a perspective of how changes is happening would be something like our Google Geist surveys. Every year, we ask the same questions to everyone across the company around, have we made strides against our execution work, or have we enabled you with the right tools? And so I think that applicability of that kind of net promoter score type approach or CSAT type approach can be the same is true in a cloud environment, which is, have we communicated the vision to you? Do you feel like your role can contribute over the next 6, 9, 12, beyond 12 months? What could we do differently to empower your skill set? So if you're willing to ask the questions, you also have to be willing to look at the data. But that's where we would start. And a lot of what we share is, as I mentioned, we open source the types of things we do.
Change is constant. Disruption can happen anywhere. Transformation is continuous, And so if we were to summarize everything we've talked about today, what might be three tips that they can immediately implement today in their strategy around transformation?
Well, I can kick us off with one tip, and that's around how you communicate change as a leader. Typically, leaders are really great at communicating the rational reason for change, why it makes sense, what's the return on investment, why this is good for our company, for our individuals, for our customers and teams. But we find that people will miss out on the heart, which is the emotional reason. And so one takeaway is when you're drafting a communication, when you're preparing for that town hall or the board meeting, think about communicating on three different levels. The first is the head. What is that rational reason for change? Why is this change happening? How is it lined up with our strategic mission or vision? What's that logic and rationale? The second part is the heart. What is the emotional reason for change? And this is picking up what you mentioned, Natalie, around why should people even care about this? What's in it for me? What is in it for each key group? And this involves a little bit of work, involves some upfront research to think about who the key users are or who your various employees are and what they're motivated by. And it will be different what their motivations are. And then finally is communicating with your feet, the behavioral change that you want people to see. What actions will people take as a result? What knowledge, skills, and resources will they get to help them with that behavioral change so they can take that step forward, if you will? And so that's one key tip, is really communicating, thinking about communicating with head, the rational reasons for change, heart, the emotional reasons for change, and then feet, the behavioral expectations that you will expect to see.
Maybe beyond what Sarah shared there, I think one of the other pieces, we talked a lot about the people side today of these transformations, and we have to acknowledge that the people plan has to marry with the technology and process. And so one of the major pieces of advice that comes out of this course and would be my tip is, how do we start to marry those two worlds together? Your people in the technology change. And so that involves talking about things like, do we have a center of excellence? Do we have agile ways of working? Have we thought about our development operations? Have we brought together our culture of engineering? These are all places where technology and people have to marry in order to be successful. And so there's a mapping opportunity here to go through those areas of technology and make sure that we're thinking about the people elements in those technological conversations. So that mapping exercise is something you can do tomorrow, which is, what are we already trying to change from a technology perspective that we might not have taken a people angle on? And I guarantee you there are some quick wins there, first and foremost.
Yeah. And then to finish off the third point, just off the back of your mapping point, Anna, I think putting that extra layer of stakeholder exercise of the mapping onto the stages of change is really key here. We know that there is an emotional change curve. This is not something we made up. It's something in the industry that people go from denial to resistance to acceptance, exploration, commitment, and then growth. And they're kind of this squiggly bit in the middle where they do a loop and go back. I think having that stakeholder mapping, but equally with that lens of knowing that everybody is going to be on a different journey of change and recognizing what those layers are, will really help guide leaders in making some of those critical decisions.
So if I was to summarize, we have communication, and from a Google perspective, open, honest, sincere communication always works. But we're also talking about communication from the head, heart, and feet. We have people, skills, center of excellence, agile development, and a mapping exercise to understand where your people align in this change. And then we have stakeholders and mapping those stakeholders to the different layers of change so that we can actually take direct action and make change happen within the organization. So communication, people, and action are the three.
and a partridge in a pear tree.
I love it.
And leaders, you can find all of these studies and all of these tactics and templates on our Rework site. So that's rework.withgoogle.com. And there are a host of really interesting pieces on psychological safety work we've done with IDEO and Stanford University and many other thought partners. So it's not just Google's thinking, it's thinking across many other outlets as well. Check it out.
Thank you, Sarah, Anna, and Natalie. What an awesome conversation. And thanks to all of you for listening. As we mentioned at the start of the episode, Google Cloud Next 21 starts next week. And of course, as I also said, that digital show will be participating with some fantastic content. Don't miss out on these episodes. Register for Cloud Next and find our podcast on the official agenda throughout the conference. Our digital masterclass series will resume the following week. So don't miss any of these episodes by connecting with us throughout social media, subscribing to the show on your favorite podcast platform, and tuning in for more insightful conversations about digital transformation and innovation all on That Digital Show. Thanks for listening.